Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome to VFN TV. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me just a moment is Steve Kalaszewski. Think about what's going on. Two of the most powerful beings in the universe. One, both of them are literally trying to bring us to a particular point as they're fighting each other. Who is that? God wants you, and he is fighting for your soul. But also, we have Lucifer of darkness, who's actually working, trying to take your soul as well. Well, think about that. What is the end game of the devil? And how do we respond to what he's doing? Well, Lance Waldo talked specifically about that. Let's join Lance right now.
But religious freedom is going. It's going. It's almost gone.
And that's the end game. What the devil wants to do is he wants to control two things. The power to define the meaning of words and the ability legally for you to disagree. So when I was talking last night about those mountains, about the seven mountains that shape culture, the gates of influence, what Christians need to understand is that the ultimate spoils of the culture war is this, the power to define the meaning of words. What is a man? What is a woman?
Right.
What is a marriage?
Mm-hmm.
What is freedom?
Mm-hmm.
What is justice? What is economic fairness?
Mm-hmm.
What you're dealing with is when the devil gets control of the gates of influence, he can redefine the meaning of things. The ultimate power of Babel is it confuses the meaning of words.
Mm-hmm.
And so Babylon is a system. It's creating a global language which is violating conscience and suppressing the freedom of Christians to speak the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Canada, it's not that far from here, where preachers can be fined or put in prison because of a position they have on the homosexuality, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be that which is going to target us. Because what they're going to say is that we consider such speech to be incendiary rhetoric, insensitive hate speech, when in fact what you're really doing is you're articulating a biblical worldview. So the wrecking ball, if released, is going to wreck the progress of that agenda.
Mm.
And you're going to see a period of time where we're going to be able to build infrastructure. You know, the thing about the wall that's interesting, I asked the Lord, I said, if everything about Trump is prophetic, then what's the business with the wall all about? Build the wall. There's got to be more than just something with Mexico. And the Lord took me to Proverbs. A man without self-control is like a city without walls broken into.
Mm.
Oh.
America has become a nation that doesn't have self-control. It has no fiscal control in Washington. It has no media control over truth. It has no moral control over sexuality. The prophetic imagery here is I'm going to rebuild walls and boundaries for the sake of putting back in self-government in America so it doesn't collapse as a government.
This is so important to really understand and break that down. The narrative, the enemy wants to be able to take over the narrative and change the definition of what words mean. Well, think about it. When you think about the church, you hear the word church. Do you think about a building with a steeple on it? Or do you actually think about what God calls the church, which is human beings who've made Jesus Christ the Lord of their life, or Jesus comes and dwells inside of them? I mean, you think about a rainbow. The very rainbow represents the promise that God gave to Noah that would never destroy the earth again with a flood. But yet the enemy is taking that. When you think about marriage and what does it mean to be married? When you think about family, what does family mean? What does family order mean? What does being a man mean? What does being a woman mean? When you think about all these different things, it's like you got to really grab a hold of, let's go back and find out the original intent of all these words. And we can find them in what God's meaning of these words in the Word of God, a biblical worldview. We've talked about that before. But one thing that he talked about and we talk about is we have to begin to organize ourselves under a common principle, under common values, kingdom values. And that's one thing that we're doing with VFN Kingdom Business. You know, you need to be able to come together. There's seven spheres of culture, seven mountains of culture, if you would, that each of these particular mountains, whoever's at the top of them, whoever is influencing them, is determining which way our culture goes. Whether it's church or religion, whether it's family, whether it's education or government, arts and entertainment, business and media, whoever's impacting them. And look how media right now in the world, what they're doing is they're coinciding with the government mountain. They're moving in a political arena, arts and entertainment. Everywhere you look, you're seeing a anti-biblical viewpoint, you know, pressed in these mountains. You know, though, that God has called us to go into these mountains, into the world, to be disciples, to be light in the midst of darkness. And God will allow us to be able to impact those mountains, whether it's government, whether it's arts and entertainment. That's what we have to do. And that's what we're doing with VFN Kingdom Business. You can go to vfnkb.org and find out more details. But listen, it's time to organize and join the movement.
We'll be right back.
I'm not the Son of God because you say I am. I'm the Son of God because God says I am. I'm not confident because of what I can do. I'm confident because of what God says He will do. I'm not forgiven because I've earned acceptance. I'm forgiven because God says He has forgiven. Help me preach. I'm not going to do it because I think I can. I'm doing it because God said I could. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
My goodness, this is exciting days. It's exciting when you're able to hear what the Lord is going to do. He tells you before it happens, you know, as he says in Amos 3:7, then you prepare for what's about to happen. I want to encourage you, if you have not yet prepared, sign up for the Torch newsletter. It'll come directly to you in your email. And for a free gift, you have prudent preparation to be able to prepare right there. It'll come right to you also in your email. You can listen to it, but you can stay informed. And I want to encourage you, join the movement. I'm telling you, God is doing some pretty powerful things. I'm excited, too, about what God's doing in Mobile, Alabama, L.A.,
yes.
Lower Alabama is taking place, you know, as part of our viewing audience. One big shout out to Mobile, and we're looking forward to being there with you, hopefully, this week. But next, we want to be able to talk about how important the difference one vote makes. We're gonna join with the continual Faith for the Nation series and listen to David Barton, Kenneth Copeland, and Bishop Keith Butler as they talk about how many races, political races, have been won by such few votes. As a matter of fact, let's take a look now.
And so one of the things I'd like to do as we continue our discussion together, I want to bring up with you the importance, both of you, the importance of this one, the one vote. You know, people out there are wondering themselves, what difference does a vote make? What difference does my vote make? How can it make a difference? And, you know, I have a number of things here that I've collected over the years, like, and you can correct me if this is wrong, but in 1845, Texas was admitted to the 28th state by one vote. Am I right? Does that sound about right? We can check.
There's a lot of those one votes like that.
1868, Andrew Johnson was spared impeachment by one vote. In 1923, Adolf Hitler won leadership of the Nazi Party by one vote. In 1960, JFK by one vote per precinct, and Nixon lost by one vote per precinct. And so one vote is extremely important. Talk to us about that.
I'll go back earlier than that.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson, and our history is so lousy today. Thomas Jefferson in recent years, they say, he's a slave owner. And so they're calling for the removal of the Jefferson Monument. They want his name, they want his face off Mount Rushmore, off the money. Mm. He's the founder of the University of Virginia, and they want a statue gone. He did the Louisiana Purchase, and that brought in, let me say it again, he's the founder of the University of Virginia, and they want a statue gone. Mm. And the University of Missouri is there because he did a Louisiana Purchase. They want a statue gone. It's all because he's a slave owner. Well, a little time out here. Yes, he's a slave owner, but not by his choice. He hated slavery, but the state of Virginia, state law, would not allow him to free his own slaves. And he writes very openly about that. Mm. When he was elected to the legislature of Virginia, one of the first things he does when he gets there as a freshman is introduce a law to abolish slavery in Virginia. Didn't get it done. When he got elected to the U.S. Congress, not U.S. Continental Congress at that time, got elected to the Continental Congress, he introduced the first national measure to end slavery in the whole nation. Couldn't get it done in Virginia, but let's end the whole nation. Lost by one vote. We missed ending slavery by one vote. And he, in his diary, Oh, to God that he would have changed one heart. Had one heart been changed? And so he goes from that. And I mean, the rest of his life, within 2 months of the time he died in his 80s, he's still fighting slavery. And so it's interesting that when slavery was finally abolished in the 13th Amendment, they asked a great black preacher. He was Henry Holland Garnett to preach a sermon on the abolition of slavery in Congress. And he stood there in Congress and said, Jefferson would be rejoicing today because he wanted this. And today we don't see Jefferson, but black civil rights leader praised him. But Jefferson's the guy who came within one vote of ending slavery in America. So there's a lot of examples of that. What I would like to do is let's take the election and say, yeah, everybody's looking up here at the presidential, but that's like the magician. Watch my hand. Well, it's the one over here you need to be watching. And what happens is where you're looking at the presidential, it's all these local races that are really so much more impactful for where you live.
You were even talking about a few minutes ago just the sheriff.
Yeah.
How important that is.
Yeah, you're talking about a local sheriff. Local officials can determine where you live, how you live, what you can do, whether or not you own a firearm, not own a firearm, state representatives. The entire local level is extraordinarily important, and in many ways have as much, and in some cases, more impact on your life than the federal officials do, and it's extremely important. The historian here, I'm sure, can tell us, even the 2000 election between Bush v. Gore, wasn't that one vote per precinct in Florida, I think?
537 votes total in Florida.
For the entire state of Florida.
less than one vote per
precinct that determined whether or not Al Gore was president or George W. Bush was president. So one vote is hugely important.
Huge.
You don't know watching this that maybe it might be you.
Right. Oh, man.
Right.
Here's voters. Constitution says if you're 18 or above, you can vote. So this is everybody in the United States who can vote. All you have to do to vote is just go down and say, this is me. I'm here. I'm registered now. What we do is in America, 31% of people refuse to register to vote. So we've now taken our voters and cut it by one third.
Say that again.
31% of people say, I'm not going to register to vote. I'm not doing that. Well, you've now taken yourself out of any chance of having any influence at all. So we've taken our 100%. Now we're only at two thirds.
Okay.
Now, of that two thirds, when you come to a non-presidential year, only 37% of this group votes. So that's less than half. Well, that's one third of what's left. So we take one third of what's left, and this is who votes for choosing presidents and congressmen, but it only takes half of that to choose the winner. So what we're doing is to choose congressmen, senators, and governors. It's one out of every eight Americans chooses our governors, our state leaders.
Goodness.
Now, when you take the presidential level, all right, we lose 31% again, so we're going to take that 31% off. So now we got two-thirds of what we had, but we get 57% voting here. So that's a little more than two-thirds of what's left, and it only takes half of that, so we break the half of that. Since 1980, only one out of six Americans chooses the president of the United States. Now, you know what? If we don't like the direction the country's going, I'm going to look at the other five out of the six. Well, I'll look at four out of six because, you know, 1/6 over here tried to choose the other guy, whoever that was. Now, here's the next step going to what Bishop was talking about. Okay, here we are. We're going to take 31% off who refused to register to vote. This time, we're going to local elections. 4% of people vote in a local election.
Oh, my goodness.
And only half of that it takes to win. So this is local elections there.
Yeah.
It's 2%. We're talking 2% of registered voters is what chooses local elections. And that's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak. That's where policies come into play. Yeah. And just to give you a couple of examples, we've really started trying to focus people on recruiting the right people for office, because one of the things you need to learn right out the bat is you want to elect people you don't have to lobby. If I have to call you as my congressman and say, George, you need to vote for marriage between a man and a woman, I've already lost the battle.
Yes.
I should have elected you on that premise. So you want to elect people, you don't have to lobby, which means you want to recruit people, you don't have to lobby, get them to run for office, which means I'll look around my church and say, what are you doing here? You need to be on school board. You need to be on public utility district. Hey, you ought to be on the junior college board. You start recruiting because that's all it takes to elect people at that level. So, examples. You get this transgender stuff coming in. You know, the president said we're going to take away your public school funding if you don't have one bathroom, one locker room for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In a town in Arkansas, 40,000 people in that town. Christian lady and then school board in that conservative town said, we're going to do it. We're going to have one bathroom, one locker room, everybody. And she says, no, Christian lady. She ran for the school board in a town of 40,000 people, got elected. She won with a total of 35 total votes. Out of town of 40,000, mm-hmm. she wins with 35 mm-hmm. votes. Go to Iowa. In Iowa, same thing there, school board there. Guy steps up and says, I'm going to run. He got busy that day, ended up not voting for himself. Nobody voted in the school board election. Had he voted for himself, he would have been the school board, but he didn't even vote for himself. One vote, when you get down to this level right here,
mm-hmm.
one vote is massive. But when you look at the presidential level, you take that little vote right there and multiply it by precinct, by precinct, by precinct. Yeah. That'll choose your president every time.
Yeah. Now, as far as the who is on the docket for voting, we've got president, and most of the people look, as you said, they're looking up here and we're voting for president, but there's a lot more at stake. We have state senators, we have
state reps, county officials, county executives, everything from city councils, of course, all the way up to United States senators is in this election, who controls
mm-hmm.
the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these things can determine everything from whether or not your Second Amendment rights are, you have them or you don't.
Okay.
I used to serve on the city council in Detroit. Okay. We dealt with things that.
That's a city bigger than a whole lot of states are, by the way.
That's true.
Literally.
Well,
that's
when I was a councilman, it was over a million. Now they've lost like 40% of the population.
See, that's more than Montana has. That's more than Wyoming has, more than North Dakota or South Dakota. There's a lot of states that have less than Detroit had.
Yeah, and we were chosen citywide.
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't have wards and districts back in my day. They do now. But then it's like being elected for mayor, so you have to run citywide. Well, even that was determined, as it turned out, by not very many votes, you know, less than one vote per precinct. You know, every single one of these elections matter. Because as a council person, we determine whether or not Detroit stayed bankrupt or not, whether or not, and all the consequences of that. Whether or not there was policies that caused pro-family policies that happened
right.
in that city
right.
or
right.
not.
That's right.
All sorts of stuff that happened. And it's every single person matters. Now, this also, though, requires, because what we're talking about in our republic is really about citizenship.
That's right.
Okay.
And being a citizen is more than just having a card and a wallet that says United States citizen.
Yeah.
It is doing some homework. Who are these people?
That's right.
Ask them some questions. Finding out who they are, like he was saying. Finding out who they are, because it's too late. It really is too late.
Yeah.
I've rarely seen a politician successfully lobbied by anybody other than folks who bring large amount of money to the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's not us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't qualify.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so that's. And it really does affect your life. I mean, you're talking about these state and local ordinances about whether or not some male, grown male, can come into a bathroom with your 8-year-old girl. Okay? And I guess for some people, that's not a big deal. But for me, I have 3 granddaughters.
Yeah.
13,
yeah.
10, and 8.
Yeah.
Okay, and when I think of some 6'2", 240-pound guy going there saying, well, I think I'm a woman, and he's going to be in the bathroom with my granddaughters, I almost forget that I'm saved.
This is so, so important. We're going to continue this conversation after this break.
We'll be right back.
David Weber from San Angelo, Texas, who's a technical training instructor, wants me to talk about conviction. David, I love this quote. I've said it many times. I think it's very true. One person with conviction is a majority. How many times I've seen a group of people that basically didn't know what they wanted or where they were going, but there was one person in the group they knew. They felt it with passion. They spoke it from the heart. They were determined that that was exactly what they were going to have, and pretty soon other people began to pick up on that conviction. They began to pick up on that passion, and what do you know? Pretty soon that one person with conviction is the majority, and everyone else is following him or her to that desired destination. I've often said to have an answer is a wonderful thing, but to have the conviction of the answer is even more wonderful.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
You think about this, that so many people are virtually experiencing life today. There's so many ways to just look at life happening on television, on computers, on cell phones. And it kind of feels like you're really doing it because we've been designed in a certain way that if you can see it, if you can visualize it, you go to a movie, for example, and something sad happens and you cry. Well, the reality is, that wasn't reality. It was actors acting it out that filmed it. And so you could really feel like you had this experience. Well, when voting takes place, you can think that you vote. You can talk about voting for a long period of time. But if you don't go vote, you didn't vote. And think about this. The votes are so important that I really feel strongly in my spirit that, you know, war is a potential for any presidency. But whoever that you're voting for or not voting for in regards to president, they may send your sons to war. They may allow something to happen in our country where we have a war even on our own shore, our own borders. Who would you want to be in charge during that time? You can choose who that is. And your vote matters. They convince you that it doesn't. There's so many people telling people to stay home, don't worry about it. They're trying to give you statistical polls saying, you know, so-and-so is already winning already. It doesn't matter. You know, voting is not really a right, even though it is as a citizen. It's our responsibility. And your vote matters. One vote matters. Let's just join them again.
I almost forget that I'm saved. I'm ready to slay somebody. Okay. But yeah. See, stuff like that happens.
Sure. At the city level.
City level.
NDOs, the ERAs, all those happen at that level. And 4 years ago, I haven't counted for next week, but 4 years ago on election night, there were also 176 state ballot initiatives.
Oh,
so you're
man.
Making policy for your state.
Yeah.
You had gambling, casino, you had do we want to have right to die, should doctors kill you or save your life? Four states defined marriage, had definition of marriage. One state said, do we want to get rid of our estate tax?
Right.
Another said, do we want to reduce or increase sales tax? And you're doing it yourself by either not showing up. I was shocked last time. I don't think there was a single state that reduced its own taxation. When allowed to vote for higher taxes, lower taxes, mm-hmm. across the board, people voted for higher taxes.
I can't remember when that ever happened.
And it's crazy because that's not what polling shows, but you know what? That's who showed up.
Right.
And
so
that's who shows up.
Right.
So the will of what the public really thinks
is
not being shown at the ballot box.
Yep.
And then they said, oh, this is terrible. Why is this happening? But you didn't go out and vote.
Yep.
Sure.
And people like you didn't go out and vote. And so one vote is extraordinarily important.
What do you do as a pastor? What do you do in your church to encourage people to vote? Do you encourage them to register? Do you encourage them? How do you handle that?
Every pastor, anything you want the people to do is accomplished one way. You preach on it. Anything you want in a church, you preach on it, and you will have whatever you preach to the people. Faith comes by hearing. Trust, confidence, belief, that word.
So pistis, for pastors, you'll have what you preach.
You have what you preach. Mm-hmm. It's really true. If you don't preach on it, you won't get it. If you preach on it, you'll get it. The congregations are and of course, God's whole system is speaking and hearing and acting.
Right.
So if the pastor takes the time to walk through the Word of God on it, people go out and vote. So it's not all that deep. It's not all that complex. Okay, if you want people to do that, that's what you do. If you keep your mouth shut, then the people, they will sit and not do much.
And you got to remember that voting in this country is very much a biblical duty.
Yes, sir.
An easy way to look at this, you say, all right, we know from the Bible, whether it be from Jude, from Romans, from 1 Peter, we know all these passages that God has ordained the institution of civil government. Now, we also know from the Bible shows us seven different forms of civil government, and there are some that God endorses. It shows you, here's what Egypt did, and here's what other nations did. So seven different forms of civil government, but what God endorses is the first one he told Israel to use. Now, remember, Israel got into a monarchy, and Prophet Samuel said, whoa, guys, and God said, this is not what I want, but the people said, I want it, and God said, okay, you want it. And Samuel said, you do this, here's what happened to your military, here's what happened to your property taxes. God's plan was back in Exodus 18:21.
Yeah, I just opened it here. That's what you've taught
choose
me.
Choose out from among you. Yeah. Let's have elections. Yeah. Let's vote for leaders of tens, local, 50s, county, hundreds, that's state, thousands, that's federal. Choose your own leaders. That's called a Republican form of government. Small r, not big r. It's not a party. Mm-hmm. You have a democracy, which the Bible deals with. Founders hated democracies. They're very bad forms of government. You have republics. We're a Republican form of government because we choose our leaders at every level. Yeah. So you can start with that. You can go to things like Deuteronomy 1, 15 and 16, Deuteronomy 16, 18. All these little passages repeat the same thing. Choose out from among you your leaders. Yeah. That was God's plan. So you can start with the fact that God wants you to do it. And by the way, Proverbs 29:2 says that when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. Yep. When the wicked rule, the people groan. It does not take a hearing aid to hear all the groaning going on, which means the wrong people are ruling. But how did they get there? We chose them, or we didn't choose them, by staying at home. So there's so many Bible verses you can use on elections. That you set it up and say, this is a biblical mandate. This is not optional.
Yeah, so you wind up going back to Genesis 8:22. As long as the earth remains, seed, time, and harvest shall not cease. And you go back to Mark chapter 4, where Jesus talks about the very same thing, which is what? Your vote is a seed. And so you will get a harvest off of whatever seed you plant.
Yep.
And if you don't plant seed, you can't get the harvest you want. So if you want government that reflects what you believe and what your values are, you must plant the seed of the vote.
Yep.
And by the way, as we were saying when Brother Copeland was here, the end result of this is that God will bless you, or the blessings of the Lord will work on you or not work on you based on the seed that you plant.
Yeah.
Okay, and the word tells us if we plant to righteousness, we receive righteousness. If we plant unto unrighteousness, then we get unrighteousness or ruin, the Greek says there, the flesh. Seed, the one vote, is vitally important for the entire institution, but the one vote is very important to your own personal survival.
I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch, at VFNTV.com. I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.